Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington on this pre-recorded program, Very Remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Wednesday, January 19, 2022. Sudanese doctors go on strike.
It is a peaceful expression by civilian doctors to withdraw from all the military hospitals and allow the military doctors to carry out their medical work on their own.
And some residents of the Greater Pibola Administrative Area say the area's markets have no goods.
The traders are running out of stock because there are no goods that are coming in. You know now that there is insecurity.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudanese Doctors Committee have withdrawn all of its medical workers from military, police, and national security service-owned hospitals across Sudan as part of civil disobedience call. The Doctors Association say it will continue to boycott work in military facilities until the men in uniform stop excessive use of force against protesters. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
Today marks the second day of a civil disobedience exercise called for by the Sudanese Professional Association. Most streets leading into central Khartoum have been blocked by the resistance committee members. Most markets and shopping centers remain closed. A heavy deployment of security forces can be seen on the streets and around government installations. The Central Committee for Sudanese Doctors announced last night they would remove civilian health workers from all military hospitals to express their rejection of what they called police brutality and use of excessive force against peaceful protesters. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus in Khartoum, Dr. Mohamed Fahal, a member of the Sudanese Medical Association, says the civil disobedience will be observed by all civilian health workers in solidarity with the families of people killed and wounded during Monday's demonstration.
It is a peaceful expression by civilian doctors to withdraw from all the military hospitals and allow the military doctors to carry out their medical work on their own. They have not supported our voices or backed up our peaceful protests. It is better we withdraw and focus on treating our people somewhere else until the situation is normal.
At least seven people were shot and killed by Sudanese security forces. Scores of others were wounded during Monday's demonstration. Fahal says as the civil disobedience continues today, doctors and nurses will only provide care in critical medical situations, including people who are wounded during the protest.
We have 14 people currently admitted in the intensive care unit, and the majority of them are responding to treatment. Unfortunately, there are three of them who have been injured in the head and their conditions are critical. If they survive at all, it will be difficult for them to get back to their normal lives fully.
Universities, colleges, and some schools in Khartoum remain closed Wednesday in response to the civil disobedience exercise. The Vice Chancellor of Khartoum University, Professor Fadwa Abdulrahman, announced the suspension of the routine work and lectures at the university for Tuesday and Wednesday in solidarity with those taking part in the civil disobedience. Fahal says civilian doctors who are members of the Central Committee for Sudanese Doctors no longer feel safe working alongside their military medical colleagues due to the continued use of excessive force on protesters. He says the doctors committee will ensure that their civilian staff are safe and secure.
The work environment in military hospitals is no longer conducive for us, unless the situation comes to normal and the organized forces back our demands. They're supposed to defend their people and their security, peace, and safety. We expect them to protect our peaceful demonstrations rather than meeting us with live ammunition.
Fahal says some health workers in Khartoum are traumatized because they find it hard to believe that innocent and unarmed civilians could be targeted with live ammunition.
The trauma caused by the incident on January 17th has created a severe psychological issue for most health workers. Their love for the country has increased, but still they are suffering psychologically. This has made some of them doubt their belonging to this beloved country.
Pro-democracy protesters have continued to reject the military coup since the day it occurred on October 25th. The head of the Sudanese Sovereign Council chaired a Security and Defense Council meeting on Tuesday and ordered an immediate investigation into the killing of protesters. The United Nations Integrated Transition Assistance Mission in Sudan, or UNITAMS, said the use of live fire ammunition on protesters was unacceptable. Its statement called on authorities to cease using force against peaceful protesters and conduct credible investigations into such incidents. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Still on Sudan, the UN Human Rights Office has condemned what it calls brutal, disproportionate use of force by Sudan's security forces against peaceful protesters, many of whom reportedly are being killed and injured every day. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The military mounted a coup d'etat against Sudan's civilian government on October 25th. Since then, credible statistics from the Central Committee of Sudan Doctors show state security forces have killed 71 people and injured more than 2,200. Of these, 17 have been killed this year. UN monitors report such atrocities occur on an almost daily basis. On Monday, they noted security forces used live ammunition to break up a demonstration in the capital, Khartoum, killing 7 protesters and injuring dozens. The use of live ammunition is only permissible as a measure of last resort under international law. UN Human Rights spokeswoman Mervina Shamdasani says a thorough, independent investigation into these violations must take place promptly. She adds the authorities must bring the perpetrators of human rights violations to justice.
It is crucial that these investigations take place, and in fact, this is one of the calls of the protesters as well. They are calling for the restoration of civilian rule, and they are calling for accountability. And every time there are additional killings, additional violence against peaceful protesters, it emboldens the protest movement, and there are further protests, further violence.
She says this is clearly not the path to the restoration of sustainable, peaceful civilian rule in Sudan. Shamdasani tells VOA military authorities justify their actions by claiming they are trying to maintain public order. She says they claim protesters have used violence and that some of those who have been arrested and are responsible for the killing of an army official as well.
But our monitoring of the protests has shown that they are by and large very peaceful. The most force that we have seen used is protesters throwing stones. Nothing at the level of the live ammunition that's being used by the military in responding to the protesters.
Shamdasani notes the United Nations does not recognize the military leaders as the legitimate government of the country. However, as the de facto authorities in Sudan, they currently are in charge. She says this means they have human rights obligations toward the people of Sudan. She says they are responsible for investigating allegations of human rights violations, including killings and gender-based sexual violence. And she adds, the military leaders must hold the perpetrators of these crimes accountable. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A report by civil society groups in Kenya says sexual violence is used as a political tool during elections. The groups are calling on the government to take action ahead of this year's polls. The study shows patterns of sexual violence during past 3 general elections and its consequences on survivors. Maureen Ojiambo reports from Milwaukee.
The joint report is based on 2 fact-finding missions following the 2017 elections and conducted in July and December 2018 in the counties of Migori, Kisumu, and Vihiga. This section analyzes the circumstances in which sexual and gender-based violence was perpetrated in the year 2007, 2013, and 2017 election periods. The Executive Director, Kenya Human Rights Commission, Davis Malombe, said that most of the rape acts were carried out by the police officers.
There were serious acts of rape and other forms of violence against women. Of course, there was a gang rape, and there was also most of the people who attacked were poor people within those regions. The alleged perpetrators are also police officers.
The report shows that in each election, there has been gender aspect to political violence and discrimination, with women being the target. Mr. Malombe says most sexual offenses during the political violence are never documented.
When there's a lot of violence, there's a lot of manifestation of SGBV, which in most cases is used as a tool of suppression. And in most cases, actually, we don't end up documenting SGBV the way it is supposed to, and also responding to it the way it is supposed to in the context of election.
In the cases documented by Human Rights Watch, survivors were raped by more than one perpetrator, and in some cases by more than 10. Program advisor, the Kenya Human Rights Commission, Irene Soila, said that in most cases, the Kenyan authority failed to address the matter.
Despite concordant elements documented by multiple stakeholders, Kenyan authorities continue to fail to implement survivors' rights to justice and reparation. From the history of 2007 to date in 2017, our report has shown or has tried to highlight the non-commitments to address issues of violence by the authorities in charge. So it is key that we realize that there is need for authorities to take action when this happens. Most of the survivors were raped without protection.
Kenya's Electoral Commission Vice Chairperson Juliana Cherera says the committee has been formed to empower women and to end sexual violence during elections.
So this Women Coordinating Committee, it is a voice amongst women so that women we can speak amongst each other. We don't have to be raped for someone to get elected. So we are looking at women having a voice that they can say no, and we as the women of Kenya, we are saying no to this.
According to the information collected by the Commission of Inquiry on Post-Election Violence, victims of sexual violence were predominantly women from economically poor backgrounds who lived in the slums of Nairobi and in rural areas across the country. The report also revealed that some men, in particular men from the Luo ethnic group, were subjected to sexual violence mainly in the form of forced circumcision or genital mutilation carried out in a crude manner with objects such as broken glass. Reporting for VOA, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Milwaukee, USA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, some residents of the Greater Pibora Administrative Area say they have no food in the markets. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the best way to introduce change?
You have to educate. Education is the key factor to change. Without education, people will resist.
You have to educate the person. You have to educate people on the situation on ground, the implication of that situation, and if the change is to come in, what impact is that change going to create?
So the best way to introduce change is to understand the change, and you try to educate the people on what change is all about.
I think just go right ahead and do it, because there are always people who don't really like change, and there are also always people who like change and they're conducive to change. And so I think there's always going to be that one person who's like, no, I don't like this, it's different.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Authorities in the Greater Pibora Administrative Area say the main market in the area has run out of stock after traders stopped transporting goods due to insecurity along the road from Juba. The area's information minister says prices of basic food have skyrocketed due to shortages and appeals to the national government to provide security for truck drivers transporting goods to the area. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Jaya Dingora Alual, the information minister of the Greater Pibora Administrative Area, says several fatal road ambushes and raids on trucks have forced traders to stop using the road from Juba. Now he says the main market in Pibora has run out of goods and prices are shooting up. Alual says the Juba-Pibor road, the route traders used to supply the Pibor market, is no longer accessible because of insecurity.
The traders are running out of stock because there are no goods that are coming in. You know now that there is insecurity on the Juba Pibor road. The only means where where a stock food commodities can be transported to Pibor is only through air. And doing that is very expensive, and most of the traders cannot afford it. So that is the reason why there are no stocks in the market.
He appeals to the national government in Juba to provide a military escort for travelers and traders plying the road.
There are many means actually of solving this issue. One is to escort the traders, because that is the urgent one, because people are running out of the stock in the markets in Pibor, so there is need to escort the traders. This is one thing, and that should be done by the government. Number two, there is need also for peace dialogue, especially between the people of Bor and also the people of Greater Pibor. Since that day when those seven traders were killed in Bor, you know there have been no communication between the two communities, and as a result, you know, that is why these things are escalating.
In the past, youth from Bor and Akobo counties have been repeatedly accused of carrying out attacks in Pibor. But Yota Lirwok, the Bor County Commissioner, says that he and his state authorities were not aware of the attacks and the closure of Juba Pibor Road.
We are not informed. Even the accusation level against us, we haven't even heard it. I just got it from the radio now. I think the best way to go about is for the government of Pibor or any of the counties making this accusation to first inform us that the road has been closed and it is being closed by your people, so that we see the way forward and so that we actually take a touch and look into the case, find out exactly who is closing down the road. Is it our people or other criminals?
Commissioner Oak says peace is the only way the communities of Pibor and Jonglei State can move forward. He says the Bor community is ready for talks.
We have been hosting a number of peace conferences, and we agreed that the peace is the only way forward. We are committed as people of Bor County to the peace, and those there is interruption in peace, we are not giving up on peace. We are still hoping that this peace must prevail between Pibor Administrative Area and the people of Greater Jonglei, Bor County in particular.
Daniel Justin, the spokesperson for the South Sudan National Police Service, says the Office of the Inspector General of Police is aware of the insecurity along the Juba Pibor Road. Justin says preparations are underway to assign police to provide security for travelers after discussions with the officials from Greater Pibor.
The day before yesterday, the chief administrator came to the office of the inspector general and for a meeting in regard to this this issue. And the IGP have agreed that he will consult with other organized forces such that a report is arranged for escort vehicles to Bibor area. So now we have a team who is going to check the road up to Dima, or there is a place in the middle there. The team will be going today. Maybe 1 or 2 days, we are sure the escort will be there with the traders with their goods.
Justin urges traders in Pibor to remain patient for a few days as the National Police Service resolves the issue of insecurity along Juba-Pibor Road. Last month, the authorities in Pibor reported at least 3 cattle traders were killed and several others wounded when unidentified armed assailants ambushed a group of traders who were traveling from Pibor to Juba at a place called Jabor between Mogiri and Mangala of Juba County. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
A presidential committee formed last year to address the issue of land grabbing and illegal settlement in the capital Juba says it's mapping out plots illegally seized to address conflicts from rampant land theft. Some victims say they doubt the committee will fully address the matter. One chief accused of taking land says such disputes in Juba are due to lack of proper implementation of the country's land policies. Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Michael Chinjek, the National Minister for Lands, Housing and Urban Development, co-chairs the committee. He says his team is meeting leaders and residents in affected areas to understand the magnitude of the problem.
In this day, we want to renew the orders of the president that we are implementing them, and we want to remind our civilians that the issue of the land is an issue that the president has ensured that it has to be addressed and solution is found.
Emmanuel Adil, the Central Equatorial State Governor, who is also a co-chair of the committee, says they are working to map and register illegally acquired lands to fix the problems. The committee has suspended further demarcation and allocation of land in Juba. Philip Rodento, a resident of Gabo Village, east of Juba Town, says he has been affected by land grabbing. He doubts the committee will resolve the issue. Rodento says many of the people involved in land grabbing are senior military officers in the government. He says unless force is used to bring the land grabbers to book, the issue is far from being addressed. He also says the land grabbers come in an organized manner with armed security personnel and equipment. They demarcate the land and allocate it to their own people or to investors.
First of all, they are supposed to apprehend those people who are selling land, and they are big people. They are generals, they are from police and the military and from other organized forces. If they are to be apprehended and taken to books by violating the constitution, violating the local government acts and all these things, even if they put the soldiers, the same people who are put there and the same people who are selling land.
Jackson Santo, a resident of Kurejik Village, north of Juba, says almost 70% of his ancestral land has been grabbed by senior military personnel. Santo says the problem in his village is so serious that land grabbers have started forcefully taking areas where members of his community bury their loved ones.
These places cannot be left to these people, because if they are left, the committee is encouraging injustice, and this is disrespect to the government. These places must be demolished. If there is compromise, the committee will look into that later. But for someone to come from Rumbek and start demarcating a place in Juba, this is conflict.
Lieutenant Colonel Arol Gau Arol is one of the chiefs of Serikat residential area in Juba. The community of Rajav Payam and government authorities have accused him several times of grabbing land and illegally settling in Serikat, along with thousands of other people from his community. Arol, who says he has lived in the area for at least 15 years, says at least 37 people have lost their lives in Serikat over the years due to conflicts over land. He says land conflicts in Serikat have not been addressed. While he welcomes the work of the Presidential Committee on Resolving Land Disputes, he says senior military officers and politicians are behind the disputes.
Let government come with a clear policy and decide on the status of how land governance in a city like Juba should be handled. For instance, it should have clear separate powers for state and national government in handling land in a place like the capital. If need be, there should be a commissioner for the capital city. This commissioner will be the one to govern the issues of land in the city.
One of the general principles of land ownership and management in the South Sudan Land Act states that all land traditionally and historically held or used by local communities or their members shall be defined, held, managed, and protected under the law. The Act also states that prior to any decision related to community land, the land administration should consult with the communities concerned. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's all we prepared for you this Wednesday. We now end this show with Emmanuel Kembe and the song Zamankuru Juja.
Zamanta kuru juja, Zamanta kuru juja, waladi. Zamanta kuru juja, yuma. Zamanta kuru juja, piti. Yo, there's a matter of Puruja, you man. Who's a matter of Puruja? No, well, I did. Who's a matter of Puruja? Yama. Who's a matter of Puruja?
We have been listening to Emmanuel Kembe and his song Zamankuru Juja, a song that is encouraging people to farm their lands. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for taking time to be with us this evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.